Okay, so let's start with what's your musical background?
It's a good question. I try and figure that out myself. It's pretty varied. I had a pretty conventional classical initial training, you know, piano lessons. I was lucky enough to study at the junior department of the Royal College of Music in London. But my taste and my overall listening, you know, led me into a lot of different areas, you know, apart from rock and roll and you know, the pop music that was around at the time. So I ended up playing in a lot of bands and a lot of different kind of ensembles and making different kinds of music, which meant that when I was a little older and I met Michael Kamen, with whom I started working, you know, we had a lot of the same interests and the same background in common. You know, he had been you know, a classically trained musician who had also played in a lot of rock and roll bands.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to speak the same language, and so I have you know, kind of all of my bona fide, you know, university credentials. You know, I ended up at Cambridge for a while and you know, studied there for a while. But you know, was also able to spend a lot of time in recording studios and play with a lot of technology.
Okay. So what was it that first inspired you to write film and TV music?
That's a good question. I mean, in the UK, you know, it's not an obvious career path. You know, there's not a huge film industry in the UK, so it's not something that you think that is normally going to easily come your way. But as I said, I did meet Michael at a very, you know, important juncture in my life, and, you know, suddenly that door opened up for me. You know, I'd always been aware of the power of music in film, you know, and you know, one of the kind of the most important moments, you know, for me was sitting as a, I don't know how old I would have been, maybe 10, maybe 11, and sitting in a theater and watching Close Encounters for the first time, and just hearing that very, very opening cue, which I believe is called "Let There Be Light," which is a series of clusters. I think there are voices and this huge big crescendo, and then suddenly a big orchestral tutti on this huge cut to the bright light in the desert. You know, that you know, just kind of fired all kinds of synapses and responses in my brain. I thought, wow, if you can do this musically and enhance a film in such a dramatic way, then you know that's got to be a tremendously exciting thing to be doing.
All right. Well, what is the first thing you do when you begin to write a score?
Apart from panic, the process actually changes from film to film, and it really depends on who I'm working with, and you know, whether we have, whether I have a long-standing relationship with the director, and you know, whether we have an already established shorthand, you know, a combined way of seeing the film. If that's not the case, if it's somebody who I haven't worked with before, it's really trying to get a sense of what for them the role of the music is going to be in the film, because that changes, and it is different for every single film. You know, music can play anything from, you know, the conventional aid to storytelling and illustrative of emotion to something far more nuanced, and you know, something where emotions and, you know, the impulses of the characters aren't necessarily on the surface. They lie deep down as a subtext, and the music is helping them bring that across. You know, music may just be you know, kind of just adding, you know, background flavor, and you know, helping to establish the context of the film and telling you something about the area that the characters live in without kind of integrating or having any kind of dialogue with what's going on dramatically. So all of these things, you know, these are all questions that you're kind of dealing with right at the beginning of the film and the writing process. Once those ideas are being discussed, you know, sometimes you're talking about the palette of the score. Is this an orchestral score? Is this just going to be purely electronic? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a combination of the two? Are there going to be any special ingredients that are going to help sell the drama or say something about character? You know, that's one reason why you know, doing what I do is such a challenge every day, because the questions are different every day, and hopefully the solutions that you bring are different every day.
Okay. Well, I first became aware of your work on a film called Species 2.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become involved with that film?
That was really through Michael. He had been asked to essentially executive produce the scores for a series of films, and one of the films that we had worked on together was a film called The Craze.
Okay.
The director of that film was a wonderful director called Peter Medak.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently to The Craze, I worked with Peter in conjunction with Michael on a film called Let Him Have It, and that was a very successful collaborative effort. And when Peter went off to make Species 2, Michael wasn't available, and Peter came to me, and that was really my first entree into the world of big Hollywood studio films. Up until that point, I've been doing smaller independent films and stuff that have been made in the UK, and it was a really nice, and you know, to have an ally and a supporter like Peter in that environment was a nice start for me here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Michael Kamen on a few occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the score to Let Him Have It, and I noticed that your name is credited along with
right.
Michael on a lot of the scores. How did you come to work with Michael at first?
It was really a family connection initially. He'd been doing some work with Pink Floyd. I'm lucky enough to have a family association with the band, and we met socially, and I think he had just moved to the UK, and he had just scored Brazil and was just embarking, I think, on the Lethal Weapon films when I started working with him. And we were both, as I mentioned before, you know, we both had a fairly eclectic musical background, and in addition, we were both oboists. He was a very, very serious oboe student at Juilliard. I wasn't quite so accomplished, but it was my secondary instrument. You know, I think maybe it was a gesture of solidarity on his part, but he hired me. I had no idea what I was doing when I first started working for him, but. It was an interesting time because the technology that the film composers today take for granted, none of that was available to us when we were working together. So for me, it was a great insight into scoring techniques of the past. You know, we were still using the clickbook,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if that's even taught these days in film music schools. But you know, it was the mainstay of film scoring for, you know, 40 or 50 years, and came associated with a very particular set of techniques and skills. So to have that kind of insight into one style of film scoring, and then to kind of ride the first wave or two of the new technology that started coming through was really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, Michael's no longer with us. What did you take away with from Michael that you'd be using today, or you know, using in the future?
A few things. I mean, I think the biggest thing, you know, working with Michael was just he had such a joy for what he did, and a real joy for music and for working with musicians, and a constant reminder that we are incredibly lucky to be doing what we're doing. You know, to be paid to make music, to be paid to have such a wonderful collaborative experience with other highly creative people is an absolute blessing, and it's one that's afforded to very few people. So you know, I never ever lose that, or I try not to lose that sense of just wonder at what with the opportunities that come our way. In terms of, you know, a specific approach to scoring, you know, I think, you know, we have probably different styles, but you know, one thing that Michael was always able to do was to take a very broad approach to a scene, and maybe even to a whole film. You know, he wasn't necessarily one, unless the situation absolutely demanded it. You know, he wasn't somebody that, you know, had to hit every single beat You know, he much preferred, you know, painting with a much broader brush. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, one of the things that I saw him do many, many, many times, and one of the reasons for this was that the technology hadn't really caught up with us yet. But you know, his main writing instrument was a big beast called a Kurzweil 250, and had a very primitive sequencer in it, and it was very cumbersome to sync it up to a VHS tape, and for the most part he didn't bother doing that. You know, the film would be playing, and he would just press play on his sequencer whenever really the moment kind of suggested itself to him. And quite often, you know, he would write without looking at the film. Would write a 2 or 3 minute cue that passed through, you know, any number of different changes and moods and modulations and what have you, and maybe he'd overdub a couple of other ideas onto that one piece in a sequencer. And once he'd done with that, he'd put the film back up, press play on the film, and then, as I say, at a certain point, he'd just start the music, and you know, the start point would be different every time. But because he had a sense of what the shape of the cue was going to be, there would be an architecture already there, and you know, I think that very plastic, if you want, that very plastic approach to film scoring is one I've tried to retain. It sometimes, because we all use sequences these days, it's not so easy. But that was something that he was absolutely brilliant at.